Alrighty, I'm back in the expo. Day three, Saturday, definitely the busiest day of Sea Otter Classic. If you can tell, but I am starting to lose my voice. So it's gonna be interesting how that progresses throughout the day, because it's definitely the loudest day. Hopefully the audio comes through pretty clear. And this afternoon is pro men and women's slalom, which is going to be really exciting. You've probably heard, if you've listened to these, you've heard the track is quite unique. So yeah, here we go, another day. Leaving the parking lot, I ran into Derek Teal. And funny enough, I put the connection together a couple years ago that one of my first downhill bikes I actually bought from you, an old Yeti 303 RDH. So it's cool to run into you and put a name or a face to a name. But a lot of people who know of you have known that you had a pretty horrible accident. How many months ago now?
It was January 30th, so we're coming up on 3 months.
Dang. You just want to give the people an update, and maybe for people who didn't know what happened, kind of a rundown of everything?
Yeah, it was gnarly. I was out on a really casual road ride. I'm on the roads that you go to escape the cars, and there was a four-way stop sign. Long story short, I got T-boned by a car at about 60 miles an hour, and there was a lot of damage. I mean, I honestly almost died, and I guess to run down the injury list, it was broken femur, open pelvis fracture, broken fibula, torn colon, collapsed lung, bleeding out like crazy. And from the moment of impact, though, it just felt like God sent the people to save me, man. I mean, I'm on country roads that you could go 5-10 minutes without a car going by. And within 90 seconds, I had an off-duty registered nurse on scene.
Oh, wow.
And she's stuffing her sweatshirt in my pelvis, you know, and it was amazing. So it ended up being this wild experience where after a lot of therapy, I've realized I know it's going to turn me into someone that I couldn't have been without the experience. So I'm starting to feel more and more grateful for it. The outpour from the community has been overwhelmingly good. And what's crazy is now I'm on more of the endurance side of the of cycling, with gravel and road and cross-country MTB, but all my roots are in gravity.
Yeah.
And so I sold you that downhill bike in 2010. And what's crazy is that people from that long ago have come out to support me. So there was this fundraiser ride together, and you had trail riders, gravel riders, roadies, like all these groups of people, kind of like you'd get at Sea Otter, but in one parking lot, just trying to support me. So it's been a really awesome experience.
Nice. Looking into the future now, what's the injuries that are going to take the longest to kind of get you back? I mean, you're already saying you're riding, which is insane.
On my baby cranks.
Yeah, and your baby, what did you say, 130?
I got 135 because my knee flexion's still not back. They pounded the rod into my femur through my knee.
Oh, that's a gnarly one.
Yeah, and they immobilized my knee for a month because they thought there was some knee damage. Thankfully, there wasn't.
Okay.
So I'm just getting that range of motion back, and until then, I'm pedaling on the bike path with some plastic pedals and 135s. But yeah, I think it's hard to say if it's the femur or the pelvis, because the femur has a tie rod in it, so it's a little bit more sturdy. The pelvis has a lot of stainless steel and plates that reconstructed it, but I lost so much muscle off my hip that I'm still walking with a cane because I partially tore all these muscles off. So it's not surprising, but having your pelvis and femur break at the same time is a challenging one. So those are going to be the ones I probably notice for the longest.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, stoked to see you out here walking.
Thank you.
I mean, that's not a long turnaround, so.
Thanks.
Yeah, man, stoked.
Dude, thanks for the support.
No worries. Nikki Nesteroff, sneaking up on you. How are you feeling for finals today in slalom?
Yeah, I'm feeling sweet. The track's kind of supernatural this year. It's not like the normal just like hard packed rhythm max pressure you can run track. It's kind of like every lap we've been letting tire and suspension pressure out, which is different. So I think a lot of people are kind of figuring out a setup, so it's going to be interesting because maybe, you know, the racers aren't as prepared as normal because you're just constantly changing your setup. So I think it's going to push people to like the limit pretty quick just based off the traction we have up there. So I think for racing it'll be pretty exciting because there's going to be there was some carnage in practice, so I'm sure racing won't be any different.
Yeah. Are you racing downhill?
Yeah, I'm doing downhill, but we had enduro, now slalom, so we'll see how we're feeling tomorrow.
when you show up to Sea Otter, which one are you the most stoked to actually race?
I'd say slalom. I mean, it's you think about it all year. It's one of the sickest events because it's head-to-head, and it's, like, the best slalom race, I think, that we have all year. But I do really well in the enduro every year, so I'd say, like, I have to do that one every year, which I do race enduro, so it makes sense. But the slalom, I'm really stoked to come here for. So, and you're just, like, everyone's on, like, cool, unique bikes, so it's just cool to see what everyone comes up with. So
I'm going to bug you about Maven brakes. Did you see all the stuff online about the lever being hard to pull and that creating arm pump?
Yeah, I heard, I read a little bit about that. I also, a lot of people were saying the brakes would work too good and it was like an issue, but I mean, if the brakes working too good, I don't really think that's an issue. I think that's a great thing, but I think it just depends on how you set it up, right? You can change so much with contact point and bleeding and lever position. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of people might demo a bike and the brakes set up one way, and if they don't like it, they didn't really have time to like change to how they like. So I think that could be a big issue, but I love it. I mean, the stronger the brake, the better, especially for what we do. So I have them on all my bikes besides the slalom bike, but trail bike, downhill, and enduro, and e-bike. So it's a good brake.
Sick.
Yeah.
You don't have arm pump.
I don't have arm pump on me, no.
I'm over here at Industry 9 chatting with Dave about just new or already out cool things for 24 that you guys are excited for people to be riding.
Yeah, so 24 started off really, really exciting for us. On the road and gravel front, which is, you know, a product category that we, you know, aren't necessarily known for, but we love riding road and gravel back at the shop. We refreshed our road and gravel line with our all new Solix SL and Solix G wheel sets. Solix SL uses bladed steel spokes, so that is our kind of go fast road race performance gravel kind of option. Solix G is pretty much just like a mountain bike wheel set for gravel bikes. So it uses our aluminum spokes that, you know, straight pull, direct thread right into the hub shell. So, you know, if you've got a gravel bike that, you know, looks more like a mountain bike with a dropper and suspension on it, you know, Solix G is for you. And then at Sea Otter, we're just really excited to get our Solix M product out into the field and, you know, under riders. Solix M is our trail and ultralight wheel collection. It's four all new mountain wheels. It's already seen a couple of victories in endurance and XC racing applications. It's also got a gravel win on that side of things. And yeah, just really excited with that. Solix is internally based off of our Hydra design, but what we've done with it is we kind of, I don't want to say put it on a diet because it's still really robust, but smaller hub shells, smaller drive ring, but, you know, increased durability with new seals. We've oversized the pawl pivots. We've given it a two-piece axle. So yeah, just really excited for that one, and kind of excited that, you know, Solix introduces kind of the beginning of a cool new chapter for us.
Sweet. You're on. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm over at SR Sun 2 right now, chatting with John. He's got two new exciting forks to run you guys through.
Hey man, thanks for stopping by.
Of course.
Got the new Oron 36 just coming out. There's a lot of new features. We got a brand new cartridge, the RC Plus like damper. It's like independently, like the high speed damper is it's an RC damper mm-hmm. with a shim stack high speed, high speed on it. So
yep.
We want to make it very simple, but we've been in development with it for about 5 years now.
Wow.
With the World Cup. So what we wanted to do is make really high flowing piston mm-hmm. and come in with like a bigger shim stack. So yes, it's a very simple for the consumer to understand with just mm-hmm. one knob
yep.
with just the low speed. But what we're making is like it's not affected by really high, fast like shaft speeds, like anything that's 8 meters a second or faster, like you get and like that you're getting on World Cup and like enduro races.
Yep.
You don't get any like huge harsh like impacts, and so like the performance on it's really really good, and the fluid flow we've just really like really wanted to hone in on that. Mm-hmm. With that new system, that also allows us to run a semi-bath in the lowers. So it has a spring backed IFP, mm-hmm. and that allows like an overpour, pour of the oil in the mm-hmm. the cartridge. So with that, also new, which is really cool in the Oron 36 mm-hmm. is we have a new bushing treatment in it. So we've invested in a new bushing process that and invest in really a lot of the seals just to get that friction really completely down.
Okay.
And it's from the out of the box, it's just really buttery from right off the top, and just it's super plush.
Sick.
Yeah, found that. So
cool. Right on. Anything else that you want to touch on that people might have not seen or?
Yeah, we also along with the Oron 36, that moving up from 35 to 36 mil stanchion, mm-hmm. we have the brand new Duralux 38.
Cool.
Okay. Which is a brand new wider pitch of a fork, has hollow crown, 38 mil stanchions, new anodized treatment, everything we've really focused on, new seals like SKF seals, and all within a really affordable like a price point, like that $850 MSRP. And just that bushing treatment going on through that. So that's going to share the same technology as that Oron 36, but it's going to have the RC Plus cartridge as well.
Cool.
So, yeah. So they share the same air system. It's a dimple transfer port, double air system, and it's just. All the little details, we've been working on in processes and just that within the factory. When COVID's going on, we're bringing in a lot of money, and we actually took a lot of that and invested into our factory.
Awesome.
And just in new machining processes and just to streamline such of that small, additionally has gone into just the overall performance right out of the box is a night and day difference we've been seeing. So
sick. Awesome. Go check it out.
Yeah, that's our son doing.
Oh, wait, hold on. I got a suspension. This bike, year-round suspension all the time.
Yeah.
What is the number one tip you would give people to arrive at a proper setup? And you can't say sag.
So I was mouthing the word sag as you said that. But, I mean, just setting up knowing... Yeah, just knowing the amount of sag that you need, what you're comfortable with is mm-hmm. that, but just yeah, that's a I'm just I had the preset
Well, what would say somebody gets their sag set right? What's a mistake you think people or an incorrect assumption people make with setup that leads them down a wrong path or something like that?
Yeah, sure. No, definitely with that is usually rebound. So a lot of as you get faster and faster, trying to stay higher up in the travel and just getting used to a faster rebound mm-hmm. tends to be is moving into that and getting your rebound a little bit faster, just being able to recover that fork a little bit more and be able to handle those forces. And it's just overall faster with traction. People tend to run a slower rebound mm-hmm. and just being able to work your way just a little bit on the faster side ends up just overall opening up the fork a little bit more and also just return and stay higher in the travel.
Yep.
And I think that's the number one thing is most people are just running too slow a rebound. And that's something I've learned over the years in the World Cup. It just seems getting faster and faster and being able to handle that stuff. And it's just a huge return in the traction department. So
sweet. Open yourself up.
Yeah.
Yep. Sweet. Thank you.
No problem. Cheers.
We'll be with you in a minute. Sorry, there's just a couple
no worries.
Yeah.
Is
your day going all right?
Yeah, it's good. It's been nice. How about yourself? How many copies would you say you've made?
I didn't take first shift, but already, I don't know, probably 20 to 25. So, an hour. You been to Expo already?
Yeah, I work for Vital MTB, which is a mountain bike website. So I've just been running around, doing all the things. Yeah. But it's been good. It's always nice to just catch up and chat with people.
I know. We at the end of the day, we kind of talk what's your, what are our highlights? And so it's what are your roses? What's your rose and what's your thorn? And everyone is just talking to people I haven't seen in a while. It ends up being the best part for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy.
All right, I got Mr. John Wanhall here with me with Intense Bicycles. I know Jackie Ricecakes did some chats with you back east during the National and all that, with kind of how your role with Intense has changed and all that. But what I'm curious about is, what's one thing you're going to miss from being on the World Cup circuit? And what's one thing you're so happy not to do anymore?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've been asked that yet. I think just the camaraderie,
yeah,
and the closeness with everybody on the circuit. We all ride for different teams or sponsors, but that stuff all changes. But the friendships always stay the same. So that's the cool part, is going to the races and just seeing your friends again. It's kind of like that old kind of core aspect of mountain biking. Like, just doesn't matter if it's a local race or a World Cup. Like, you're just somewhere riding bikes with your friends and hanging out and laughing and traveling. So that's probably one thing I'll miss about it. And then one thing I won't miss about it is all the travel, you know. And it's not even the travel. It's just the length of the trips sometimes. Yeah. It gets pretty taxing, which is great when you're young and single and stuff like that. When you get older and you got a family at home, it gets pretty taxing to, you know, be gone for 4 weeks, home for 3 days, gone for a week, home for 2 weeks, gone for 4 weeks, home for a day, gone for 3 days, back home. Like, you just – and there's no consistency to it. It's not the same schedule every year or the same – timing of scheduling or anything like that. So yeah, sometimes your trip is a week, sometimes it's 4 weeks, sometimes it's 3 days, sometimes it's 6 weeks. Like, so just having that consistent home life. And so I'll still have a few trips this year planned, but it's fine because they're planned and they're spaced out and I can accommodate for them and it's all good. But yeah, man, I'll still miss the travel.
Yeah.
But I also won't miss the travel. Yeah. So
it's, for sure,
it's a double-edged sword. But I'll miss the boys, man. I'll miss hanging out with the guys. So yeah.
What was your favorite venue to go to every year, and which one were you just like dreading every year?
Great question. There's probably a couple on both of those lists. My favorite, I always like Leogang and Leger.
Okay.
Leogang's just, the venue's cool. The hotel we stayed at, we could walk to and from the pits. The finish line, we could walk to and from our hotel room. So we just didn't have to leave early and beat traffic and sit in the rental car to and from the track and organize, you know, rides to and from the track, and getting athletes to and from the track when between athletes and staff. Just logistically is amazing. The views are great. The people are cool. The food is good in Austria. Like, for whatever reason, I love schnitzel. all about it. And strudel.
Yeah.
I'm there for it. And Leger, that was always a favorite. Kind of same thing. Like, you can, Morzine is right there. So if you had time to get rides in, you could go do some laps in the park. And the riding there is awesome. The food's good there. That's just a super cool destination. Places I didn't like, I don't know. Fort William was beginning to creep up on that list of places I didn't like. It's cool because it's so legendary, but it's so remote and far away, and just the weather's never good. And, you're just kind of like, ugh. It's dreary typically, but it's unique.
Yeah.
And I'd love it for that. So, there's not too many that I hate per se, just some that I
look forward to less.
Look forward to less. That's a great way to put it. Yes.
All right. Well, you're not going to be at Fort William in a few weeks, which sounds like is maybe a little bit of a relief. But watching it from back home, who would you put your money on for? Let's just do all four classes.
Oh boy,
juniors are tough because I think we're doing like a lot of people have moved on. We have like a whole new crop of talent. So personally, I'm like, I don't really know who's on that list. You might know somebody that people should keep an eye on, but
yeah, for sure. It's tough for me because it's so being on a race team and in the race world, although at every race, your focus is so singular on your crew, your staff, your riders. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're not even getting to watch the race there. So it's tough to watch. The athletes always have a great idea because they're on track watching everybody. This past year was interesting when Aaron got hurt and I was doing line coaching stuff for the team, getting to see more people on track and watch how they're riding and how quick they look, and then comparing that to their results. Some people look fast in practice, and then they, you see them, they're like, I had a great run, and they're 54. And you're like, that's interesting. And you see some people that look, you're like, is everything okay? Like, you don't look good, you don't look smooth, and then they fourth. You're like, wow, okay, cool. Like, so there's really no way to like judge that kind of stuff. So it's difficult to make those predictions, really. You're like, you're just guessing. And if you look back historically, even last year results, like we had, what was it, 6 winners at 7 races. Jackson was the only repeat winner. And so it's just so random. But gosh, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing how Greg gets on with the new bike.
Yeah.
And seeing that kind of stuff, because he's been on such a standard platform for so long. So I always love when guys who've been on something so familiar mix things up and to see how they get on with it. So I'll be interested to see how he does. I'm very curious about that bike and the design and his riding style. I know how he can be just from being friends with him and his mechanic, old mechanic Marshy. So yeah, that's I'm interested to see how that goes on the men's side. The classics, Loic, can he continue to be dominant? I really enjoy that. I love people who are really good at their craft, and some people get tired of the same guy doing well and winning, but I really love that. That shows a level of dedication and to their craft, and to stay on top is so difficult in our sport. And so I really like to see if guys can continue to do that. So I'll be stoked to watch Loic. Joe Breeden, our guys, obviously, I'm stoked to see how Joe's doing. He's switched up a bunch of components, been training harder than he ever has, and that whole team, really. Oscar Griffiths, he had some really good spurts of greatness last year as a junior men. He would have amazing top splits and then either have a mechanical or a crash. So he's kind of a typical junior year. Like, you got to keep it together and like learning experience. And then there's Ryder Lawrence, who's first year junior on that program as well. And I think he's flying under the radar.
He totally is, because so many people have said Asa
understandably.
But Ryder, I really have forgotten about him. Apologies. Because he's fast. He's fast as shit.
Super fast. And he's coming off injuries as well. He's had now 3 broken arms in the last 4 or 5 months. And so he's just coming off of that injury. So no pressure, obviously. And I've had a lot of conversations with him. Just learn. You know, Oscar has a year. You're on the same team as Oscar. He has a year of experience. Follow him around. Be his shadow. Learn all that kind of stuff. Get used to the food and the changes and the beds and all that kind of stuff. Those are the big things that those juniors have to get used to.
For sure.
Females, and again, it's our riders I'm real focused on. Lou Ferguson, she was really on the cusp of some breakthrough results last year, and then crushes it at Hardline. And it's just, after meeting her at team camp and seeing her personality and her approach to racing, I'm like, you have so much potential, and like I really want to see that get capitalized on.
That's cool.
Eleanor Farina from the females as well. I think she has some good potential up there. And then there's like the classics, you know. I hope Rachel comes back and races another race. Like, just come out for a random one. Let me see what you can do still.
We're all selfishly, we're like, please come back for just one.
Just
to remind everybody again. Once a year.
I want to see the greatness.
Yeah.
So, that kind of stuff. And the junior women, I mean, obviously, Eris, the reigning world champ, like, probably keep an eye on her. And the rest of the girls coming up. I know the transition squad has some girls coming up on that kind of stuff. So it's cool to see those classes just continue to grow. And their capabilities increase. Racing all these harder national tracks domestically, and it's helping them out at the World Cup scene. And you see what they ride, and like I've ridden some of the national tracks that they ride, and I'm like, yo, you guys are good. So just stoked to really just watch and see how everybody goes. There's been a lot of change this year, so see just kind of where everybody settles into. I'm stoked to see it. And even I'd like to see Danny Hart even like see how he does.
I would too.
After going through, you know, the off-season difficulties, it's tough to like kind of get jerked around like that and not really know where you're landing, and then okay, I got a ride or got the bike, and now I really got to put the time in and work, so it'd be cool to see if he can overcome those challenges, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man, I'm all over the place. I like to see the underdogs. I like to see the past champions continue to be champions.
Yeah.
And then just the up and comers and the juniors. I'm excited. I've been more excited for this race season than I have any other season, because I'm like, I get to kind of open my scope of visuals and pay more attention to people other than just the guys I'm taking care of.
So, yeah. Makes sense. Now that'll be you have such a unique perspective on it, and I do forget, even as, like, you know, all these racers, they're all focused on themselves. Like, it's interesting I asked Dakota just kind of about competition sometimes, and he knows everyone's fast, but it kind of doesn't matter, you know, because it only matters what he's doing and running a team, being a part of a team, same program. So.
And that's another dude. Like, I mean, Dakota's a great friend of mine. So, as a friend, I want to see him do so well,
right.
And I think he will. I see the work he's putting in, and I still talk to him. We catch up on things, and we just had dinner. It was me, him, and Gwynny, and a couple buddies from GoPro.
Sick.
They had dinner last night, and I don't think any of us talked about bikes or racing one time. We
good.
Just kind of laughed and told stories and stuff. So
but
I'm still gonna be watching and rooting for my boy over there. I hope he does well. He's putting in the work and a lot of work, but again, it's a whole new program. It's being built from the ground up. Can he overcome those challenges? Can the staff and the team overcome the challenges and all that kind of stuff? So it's stuff to pay attention to. And I think as fans get so focused on just results a lot, but you have to remember how much is going on behind the scenes of your team dynamic, the team vibes, the staff support, the hotels you stay in, you know, the vibe in the pit, like all of that contributes to your results over the weekend. And it all, when they say so many things have to come together for a win, like they mean everything from your flight into the venue.
Yeah.
Like if you had a bad flight in and you start your week off on the wrong foot, no sleep, like it can affect your whole week and your results. So it truly is a very dynamic sport in terms of results.
For sure.
And so, even, man, David Trummer, like I was really looking forward to seeing him, and he, poor guy, just had the biggest crash. So I hope he heals up. Bummed to see Jackson out. Like,
I know.
Like, you want to see that competition in there and fighting for wins. So.
Yeah, especially while Greg's still involved. You get both ends of the age talent spectrum, different generations.
And with Asa coming in. So
I've got,
I don't know if I can say it, but we may see Asa at Fort William. After all, we'll see. Judging by a few people I've talked to, it was not a pretty injury, but it didn't require any surgery or anything like that. Just kind of healing, and it may be like a pain tolerance thing. It sounds like, if he can handle it, so we'll see. Maybe he sits out the first round, but I don't think we're gonna miss Asa for an entire season. We'll see him out there. Unfortunately, I think Jackson will probably be the majority of the
season.
Sounds
longer than not, but
so.
You know, both. I mean, both of them. You already know they're fast and they're talented, and it's another like selfish thing. We're like, I just want to see you guys between the tape with everybody else.
Yep.
But you'll be there for years, so it'll come. You know.
And I can't wait to watch them all, dude. And now I just get to be like a super fan of everybody.
Yeah.
I just get to really dig in and like be a fan of racing. So I love that.
Now you get to join our forums complaining about different aspects of racing and conspiring about who's doing what.
Yeah, I'll just make up an alias and start stirring the pot in there.
So if you don't, I'll make one for you.
Start posting for me.
All right, I'm pretty sure everybody listening to this would be pissed if we didn't talk about the Gearbox downhill bike. So let's start. Let's open that can of worms. But let's start basic, because someone's like, what the hell's a pinion gearbox? How does that work? I feel like you're probably someone that could explain it simple enough just to understand the differences of that and the benefits of it.
Yeah. I mean,
or how it just functions.
Yeah.
I guess.
Benefits are application based, really. But the basic premise of it, it's essentially like a car transmission in there. You know, you have your gear steps, two stage little deal in there. So it's, for those that understand that, that's all that it is, really. And if you don't understand it, it's like a car transmission, like an automatic transmission that you're shifting manually, essentially. So you just click a gear and it goes to the next one internally there. And so it moves the unsprung weight off the rear of the bike to the center of the bike, and that matters for a multitude of reasons. Kinematically, traction, feel, compliance. You can eliminate chain line differences. You know, you just have one external gear drive, one straight chain line. You don't have to worry or account for a gear cluster. You know, you can build your rear wheel stronger, play with spacing a little bit more yeah. likely drop down to 148, which is brings in like a continuity of compatibility with wheels and that kind of stuff. So there's and even it opens up a lot of creativity from the kinematic side as well. I've been a huge fan and a proponent of a gearbox downhill bike for a long time. For people that don't know, ask Gwinny, dude. I would bang that drum every time somebody would ask about it. He would literally just roll his eyes and say, here we go, and have to walk away because he's heard me say it a million times since forever. and I finally got it done. And Jeff at Steber at Intense was as excited as I was about it. And so I finally found my people that were down to do something weird or take a chance on something. So it took a little bit of time because we had some other projects that we were trying to wrap up and do. And then, you know, it got brought back up about 6 months ago. And long story short is we basically said if we can make it fit on our current bike without modifying anything, let's give it a shot. And so we did. We just, the engineer checked if it could overlay and not interfere with any pivots.
Oh, wow.
And we did it. And so we said, screw it. Throw that thing on there. Let's weld it up. We made one little change to our chainstay so we could run the stock pinion tensioner.
Okay.
If we go forward with it, we'll do some actual engineering. This was a very quick proof of concept. Can we do it? That's why we have the chain on there, not a belt drive. The belt drive requires a little bit more effort and engineering time, and we just wanted it up and going. Mm-hmm. Can we do it? Is it feasible? Is it worth it? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we're at now. So we're in that is it worth it phase, and there's for sure some potential there. So we're going to take it to the next step and explore it on some more official testing. So we'll get some unique stuff made for it. Okay. Be able to run the smart shift from pinion on it. And then we'll do some 3D printed backbones that's all one piece with the pinion mount in it. So we're not hacking and welding a pinion mount in there anymore. Okay. And increasing a chance for a weld failure or anything in that area. Get those tested. And then who knows if all goes well, may or may not try to get one under one of the team guys if they're willing to jump on. There'll be no pressure, obviously. Yeah. But if they feel the need that they could get an advantage from it, then let's give it to them. Let's give them the tools. And that's just kind of the way our mentality has been intense, and what we want to continue to portray is that our foot's on the gas. Just because you finish one project doesn't mean we're done and we shelf it and we hang out and enjoy the fruits of our labor.
Like, yeah.
It's on to the next one. How can we make it better? Can we give the race team something, an advantage that somebody else doesn't have? Mm-hmm. And it may or may not be an advantage. We're very open and honest with ourselves about it.
Yeah.
Even myself, I had to remove my bias from it because I was obviously excited. It's a personal passion project that I've been trying to do. And I had to ask myself, truly, what is the advantage of it other than just the cool factor, you know? And so I think there are some advantages beyond that.
Cool.
I don't want to reveal those just yet. I've talked to a few people about it that hadn't thought of some of the stuff that I did yet. And so I want to like explore that a little bit more with our engineering team, play with some things. I've had a few conversations here at Sea Otter with some interesting people that have seen it and approached me that I didn't know existed in this industry. and you know, people come up, say, hey, we do X, Y, Z. Let us know if you want to check out whatever with this bike. We can help you in this way, form, or fashion.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, and it's been very well received. Even the guys from Zeroed came over and was like, dude, I love that you're doing it. If you have any questions, here's my card. Shoot me an email. I'll be happy to help. Like, you know, I was like, that's kind of what's cool going back to like the race stuff. Like, it did, the bike industry is so cool and like the camaraderie there that another brand can come over to us and say, hey, we noticed you're doing that. I love that. It looks so cool. Like, congratulations. If you have any questions, let me know. Like,
yeah, that's sweet.
That's our world. Like, and we'd love to help you. And it's like, heck yeah, dude. High five. Like, that's awesome. Like, yeah. We're not enemies. And it's really cool to see, man. It's faith in humanity and what I love about our industry. So that's basically where we're at. It's, for now, it's a special project. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll hit a production run, limited edition or something like that. But let's get it to the next step and actually see if that's something we want to do.
Sick.
And if it's possible. So maybe not.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You guys don't hide what you're working on, mm-hmm. but I call them bike diapers, whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
People wrapping prototype bikes is very popular. What's your opinion on those?
So I just want to explain it because I don't think anybody's explained why they do that yet. There's two reasons. Either they have something that they think is unique enough or is in a current patent process that can't be shown because they don't want somebody to jump ahead of them and snag a patent or jump ahead in that process. So they have to protect it in that sense. That's more rare because typically if it's a patent issue, they're working on that long before it ever reaches the diaper phase. And stuff is far enough along to where it can be seen and they have a patent pending or yep. something like that. The biggest reason what people don't understand is that the entire bike industry essentially uses a software program called Linkage. Many people in the forums are aware of it. They have yep. their own versions of it. They're playing with it themselves. It's how Nico started with his bikes and his programs and just messing with Linkage and saying, I can do this myself. What you can do in Linkage is you can take a photo of a bike, upload it, and plot the pivot points on Linkage to determine what the kinematics are. So what companies are doing when they're covering their bike like that, typically the case, and I don't know personally, like Canyon, for example, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly why they're doing it. Most likely, they're covering up the pivot points. Gotcha. If one pivot point is exposed, that's fine. They could actually expose every single pivot point, but if you could cover one pivot point, you can't complete the puzzle and determine. You can make educated guesses.
Yeah, yeah.
People did it with the Specialized.
Yep.
You're looking at it. You're making educated guesses where the pivots are or guessing what they would do and where the linkage would go and how it worked. And they got pretty darn close. And you can do that. But that's the whole reason behind that. You're just trying to cover up your pivot points to protect your kinematics if you think that you have an advantage over something like that. Or a design. So it's either design, kinematics, or... trying to protect a potential patent that's in process. So there's a reason for it. It's I know they're ugly. We're open about it. I've been on both ends of the spectrum where, working at Specialized, it was, you better not let anybody see this type of conversations. To intense where Jeff is freaking posting the prototype that he's making on his Instagram like before I ever even get to see it or anybody in the company gets to see it. And so it's a really unique perspective and standpoint, and I'm learning to really like enjoy that and lean into the transparency because people do really love talking about it and nerding out about it. And if you're open about it and saying just like, this is the first one, we don't know what we're going to do with it yet. We don't know if it's an advantage or not, but we're trying.
Yeah.
We're going to check it out. And if it is, then we'll bring it to market. And if it's not, then you'll know why. Like mm-hmm. something didn't work out on it. And it's cool to generate buzz and let people know that we're not just a stagnant company. We don't just crank out regular production bikes. And we're always working on something cool, fun. We've got projects behind the scenes that we don't show. But this one we do show. So some we show, some we don't. That's just kind of how we do it.
How hard would I have to twist Jeff's arm to take the downhill bike and just make the tabs fit like a Shimano EP8 motor and make that an e-downhill bike? Why is Intense is the one to lead that charge? It needs to happen.
You could. It's not Jeff. You could breathe on Jeff's arm, and he would do that.
Okay,
100%.
I'm gonna send an email on Monday.
It's more of a bandwidth and how much time does Jeff have to put into something like that? In a heartbeat, he would see. I know you well enough, Jason. I could bring you down to the shop and show you some projects that never saw the light of day.
That would be a cool story.
They're just hanging around the R&D shop.
Yeah.
Maybe they will someday, years down the road. But there's some weird stuff down there that he's done. But it's cool.
You know? I can imagine.
It just doesn't fit in our product lineup. But it was Jeff's such a creative guy that he has to scratch those creative itches, and maybe it becomes something, maybe it doesn't, but at least he got to express his creativity and, yeah. and do that kind of stuff. Our engineer, Byron Anderson down there, he's really interested in maybe like a small powered battery downhill bike option where you could like pedal some laps. I don't know what if the market is ready for that yet, but
they're not ready because they don't know they want it.
They don't know they want it yet. But if you can meet them at the market and give them something they don't know they want yet, we'll be cooking with gas.
Perfect. Yeah.
Maybe one day. We don't know yet. Yeah. So we'll see.
Right on. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, I'm over here at Transition Bicycles with Lars, and maybe you guys don't have anything too crazy new or exciting or anything you can hint at, but I know you just mentioned there's some new colorways with some models, and maybe also maybe break down your guys' e-bikes, because you have some cool, you have three models that are all unique in their own way, and I get questions a lot about the Relay since we've done some reviews of it, and I think people are still trying to differentiate those in their mind, but run us through just anything that's new and maybe some e-bike breakdown.
Yeah, for sure. Well, welcome back, Jason. Good to see you again. Yeah, so we had kind of limited space within our booth, so we couldn't bring the whole model line down, and we wanted to have kind of like fairly dialed booth space and not super cluttered, you know, so we had to pick and choose between what we brought down. We've got our Spire here, we have Smuggler, Spur, Patrol, and then Repeater Powertrain and the Relay. So we've got the e-bikes kind of sitting together, as that's kind of a neat way to discuss them, you know, when people come and have questions. Powertrain bike is awesome. I'm actually going to race one next weekend at TDS.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm stoked on. And we've had a lot of questions about the Relay as well. They've all been dipping into the e-bike thing. You know, we kind of were a little unsure how that was going to go. And so far, like, you know, our customer has been, you know, pretty open, you know, about checking them out. And it's kind of nice to have a variation of like the Repeater Shimano EP8 bike, you know, which was our first one. And then the Relay, which is the Fazua Ride 60 modular battery bike, the two bikes in one. And then the SRAM Powertrain Repeater. So we kind of have a variation. You know, we have like different offerings for people that prefer a different system or whatnot. And kind of similar bikes in one, all three. But Powertrain bike and the Relay are mixed wheel or dual 2.9, whereas the Shimano EP8 bike is a fixed 2.9. I guess you could put a 27.5 on the back, but it doesn't have the flip chip. We have the standard Relay here, which is the dual 2.9 version, air shock. Between that and the PN-Dub version, which is a mixed wheel coil shock, a bit heavier duty spec, I would say it's a good mixture of customers that are picking one over the other. As you noticed, you know, like the PN-Dub bike is probably a little bit more capable on the descents, and you'd probably be a little less apt to pedal it without the battery, whereas the dual 2.9 version is a little bit lighter weight and a little bit more of like a longer travel trail bike version of that bike. I've ridden that bike powered. I've ridden that bike non-powered with the battery in it, and ridden the bike without the battery. And it's capable of doing all those things, depending on how willing you are to put that much effort into it.
Yep.
You know. But yep. It's been a fun bike to ride. People seem stoked. We're answering a lot of questions about all the bikes. You know? Nice. And I wouldn't say that e-bikes are taking the world by storm by any means yet. It's good to have bikes for everyone.
Yeah. That's a question I have, is if you could look into a Silver Ball 5 to 10 years down the line, where do you see the e-bike space? Because you guys are one of the first brands to dip into that modularity concept. And to me, that seems like it has legs and could be neat. But then also, I think as batteries and motors get smaller, there could be a day we're all on a bike that we pick and choose when we want it to have assistance, you know? And
yeah, I mean, that's a $10,000 question, you know?
Maybe more.
Yeah, totally. And if you were fortunate enough to know what was coming, you know, you might be able to answer that question more accurately. Unfortunately, I'm not able to do that right now. And at this point, it's all speculation, yeah. You know. But based on the interest here, like, it does not seem like one option is surpassing the other.
Okay.
By any means. Yep. You know, there are people that just ride e-bikes. There are people that just ride regular bikes. And then there are people that have both, you know. It's been kind of a really nice social experiment just being here and just talking to people, you know, and hearing about what they're into,
yeah.
You know. And I think for us, we just kind of want to be able to offer bikes for everybody and what everybody's into.
Yeah. All right, last question for you. You guys have three bikes with three E system, Shimano, SRAM, Fazua. Is that not way harder than just picking one brand to work with for all your bikes? It just seems like it's a lot of energy to build around each system a whole different platform. Mm-hmm. But like you were saying, I mean, you end up with options for different types of riders on what they prioritize, which is cool. It seems like a lot of more work.
Yeah, it is, for sure. But, you know, each one has a certain character trait that is kind of sweet, you know? And so it's nice to have different flavors. Obviously, our lives would be way easier if there was standardization between, like, the battery system and the drive unit system, you know, like standardized mounting. But obviously that's never going to happen across yeah. all the e-system brands.
Yeah.
For good reason, I suppose. But yeah, it's more challenging. But I mean, we love this stuff. We're into it, and love the exploration part, and love the development part, and love the like being able to offer our customers like what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach. And as you once put it, when I came up to Bellingham, you want to go get weird on some e-bikes?
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. I'm like, this is a different way to look at riding e-bikes. And I've been trying to push on everybody else. Don't just pedal up the fire road, people.
Yep.
Go ride up some stuff that you might have to try a handful of times. Make your climbs fun.
Totally. And I love still getting weird. And yeah. I'm going to race my e-bike, which is a race TDS Enduro, which has normal bikes and e-bikes on the same trails. And, you know, there's a good mixture of people doing both.
Yeah.
For me these days, I'll probably never have a number plate on again unless it's on an e-bike.
Okay.
And I'm not planning to be competitive in any way. I'm doing it for fun, you know. And to that point, you know, like I've got my repeater powertrain here and I've just been following our athlete Tilly around doing downhill practice and slalom practice and qualifying. And this venue is massive.
Yeah.
And it's really hilly. And I've just been cruising around, and it's so sweet to have that bike here and not have to walk everywhere, because as a vendor or an exhibitor, like you walk a lot,
yeah.
You know?
You're stuck in the puzzle.
Yeah, and for example, yesterday, Tilly and I got here at like 7 o'clock to get her up on the start hill, the downhill start hill, which is way up above where we are here in the expo area. And we were all prepared. We had everything ready. And we get up to the start, you know, 10 minutes ahead or 5 minutes ahead. And they were like, are you planning to practice? And Tilly's like, yeah, of course. Why? And they were like, well, you need a number plate. And I was like, oh, no. So I just ripped down here, went into her backpack, grabbed her number plate, and I made it back to the start in 6 minutes. And she was still like the sixth person out of the gate.
Yeah.
So they're also really sweet for that.
Yeah.
You know? So,
like, right.
Good for all things.
I'm like, that's a really expensive commuter e-bike, but it's a pretty sick one. Right.
But it's not just for that.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, Lars. Always appreciate it.
Absolutely. Good to see you, Jason.
Cheers. All right, I'm still at Transition. I got Marco Osborne here.
Yes.
I really want to mention your posters and what you've been crossing out, but Lars told me I couldn't bring it up, so I'm not going to. But, yeah, we were just chatting about what your year looks like. Run us through kind of your schedule, what you're stoked on.
pretty stoked on kind of having the freedom to pick and choose events that I'm kind of fired up on, and makes me happy to go racing and fired up and keeps the motivation high. So been doing a little bit of downhill racing this kind of off season, and maybe do some later in the season. But besides that, yeah, I focus on a couple of the World Enduros, a couple of Big Mountain Enduros, Stone King Rally, Mega Avalanche, hopefully Downeyville, just kind of a mix of events and events that, yeah, fire me up and that I know will challenge me and kind of, yeah, that I know that I could have a good time at and, yeah, enjoy. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's got a lot on my plate, but feeling strong and excited for it. So, yeah, gonna,
We got dirt bikes in the background with a three-year-old on it.
Yeah, just got to keep revving it up like little Rick over there.
What bikes are you racing? I mean, those, like, kind of a broad spread. Are you on the same bike for all those events mostly?
No, kind of able to ride a bunch of different transitions. Like, I've been on the TR11 doing some downhill racing. That's been kind of fun and like a big challenge for me to kind of set it up, because I'm not really used to downhill. And then for enduro, I'm kind of focused, I'm just like set on racing the Spire. It's just big 29er and super stable and badass for that. But then, like, if there's a Downeyville event, like style race like that, that's like the Spur, the 120 bike down country. And then this weekend I'm racing the Smuggler, which is a 130 140 in the front. So yeah, kind of racing bunch of different models of transition, and yeah, it's pretty fun.
Hell yeah. All right, this is a question I've been throwing at media, at industry people, but I'm curious to hear your take. What's one trend of mountain biking you think needs to die and go away?
Maybe the social media, like just like the whole like influencer, just like how heavily weighted it is, and how some, I mean, I'm not like against them personally. It's just like, it just seems like a lot of the industry is kind of like valuing that maybe a little more. And like, if you look back like 10 years ago, like I didn't, like we didn't even start our careers with that. Like that had nothing to do with it. And now I feel like that's a big shift. And there's still a lot of like awesome characters and good people that don't have a good following, but they're great assets to brands and also like provide great results and great feedback for development and all that kind of stuff. So that's definitely been a big swing and a shift that I've seen, and not as fired up on to see it, you know, like taking sponsorship dollars from racers.
Marker's a photo guy.
Oh yeah, I gotta get in these photos.
Thank you.
The life of a professional athlete.
Very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All in all, it's good. It's good to have other ways to kind of give back and add value, but yeah, definitely little different in my mind. So
I dig it. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck this year.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, fired up.
Alrighty, I'm over at Norco right now chatting with Ashley, and as a lot of people probably saw, two exciting bikes that launched earlier this year, the High Pivot Sight and Optic. Or was that the end of last year? Was that this year? All right.
Yeah. February 28th.
It's April. It feels like it's been a long year already. But one thing that I wasn't aware of that maybe other people weren't also is they're offering the Missing Link. So why don't you run us through what that offers to people?
So within both bikes, it's going to adjust the positioning of your rear suspension within the front triangle. So overall, you're not compromising on any kinematic with the bike, any geo setup, and it's just going to adjust the positioning of your rear triangle so that it accommodates either the 29 or the 27.5.
Sweet.
Without dropping your bottom bracket.
Cool.
So nobody likes smashing pedals.
Yeah, that is true.
We're going to fix that for you.
Awesome. Very cool. And you said that was 115 US?
About 115 US.
Okay, awesome.
Two bikes in one.
Sweet. I love it. That's perfect. Is there anything else exciting or new that you want people to be aware of in case they missed it? You guys launched a lot of bike this year. So, and we've covered most of them on the site, at least mentioned, and we have reviews in the works for some of the full power e-bikes, but... yeah. What are you most excited about? Why don't we go there?
I'm just stoked on the brand this year. We've got a lot going on. A lot of people may not know, but we're turning 60 this year.
Really?
Which is wild. So much fun. We also signed a pretty tall South African dude.
That's true.
That's going to be racing next weekend alongside a feisty redhead who's hungry for a podium, and Lucas Cruz is not letting it go either. So we're excited. Keep an eye out. Watch the brand. We've got a lot going on.
Yeah, I've been chatting with a lot of people about racing the past few days, and the amount of people that are like itching to see Greg on track, like, I think he's going to be up there more than he's been in years. He's like revitalized. He seems so motivated.
Oh yeah, he's so stoked to be on the bike. Yeah. Every week we get personal text messages from him saying, "I did that. I adjusted this. I can't believe this." He's stoked to be on it. Like, we saw even in the first 5 runs he did, as soon as we introduced him to downhill prototype, took 5 seconds off his time. Like, it's just, it's wild. He's comfortable, he's set, and like you said, he's hungry. He's ready to race, ready to feel good.
Yeah, excited. You mentioned 60 years. Do you guys have any cool plans around that you can mention?
Oh, we might. We might have a thing or two around 60.
Okay.
Definitely keep an eye on us for the next couple months.
Okay.
We know that there's a big party happening in July in our backyard. Crankworks.
Be
so,
there.
definitely be there.
Cool.
We're having fun in Canada.
Awesome. I look forward to seeing it. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
But that is what dual slalom is all about. How close
can these racers line
up? 4:03.
Holy cow, little Nicky just won slalom.
I knew we were going to do the final together as our second final. And it was a really cool racing with them. So, got to thank everyone at RE Bikes for putting this awesome bike together. And Shram and RockShox for dialing it in all week. And Canada for hooking me up with some good tires. It was, the bike was perfect. And yeah, I'm stoked.
Man, I don't know who you've been going to for your commentary. The hits there, but I got nothing else for you. I think you crushed the interview. You killed the race. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Nesterov. There's Martha Gill. Martha, come on up here, Martha. I'm not going to call this an upset because you put on a clinic today. But this is actually a pretty historic win for the women's Fox Racing dual slalom final here.
First time in the last 12 years. Not a different team. Tell me about your day.
His loss was a big struggle. I think everyone struggled with it, but as we started racing, I was like,
holy shit, what do you think of that?
Fucking A! Dude, he powered so, like, you looked the roids really kicked in.
How did it actually feel? Were there nerves, or were you just like feeling it?
That was so sick.
I was just trying to really focus on my coloring technique, and then anywhere it was possible to.
Fuck, I can't.
You racing the downhill tomorrow?
Oh my god, it's like.
It's
like beating the master at his own game. Yeah. Really nuts.
I'll tell you, this is literally a historic win. First time we've had a different winner that's not named Jill Kittner.
Yeah, that was big.
This year's winner's named Martha Gill. There she is, ladies and gentlemen. But were you having a good time out here today?
Tanner, throw this phone in front of Nick and just be like, yo, what are you just recording on?
So, always amazing. Yo, what the hell?
Nick,
always great.
Final, how you feeling?
Dude, I'm over the moon. Like, that was insane. I obviously, after qualifying 11th, I was a little unsure if I could pull it, and I had some awesome battles. Like, after Dakota's and I's battle, I knew, like, I had it in me to win, but I knew I was going to have to get through some other guys, and obviously Mitch is kind of the pinnacle here. So I knew once we got in the final, I had to hit all my marks, and I did, and made no mistakes, and it was good. So.
How are you going
to
celebrate?
Don't go speaking, baby!
Going to hang out with my fam and all my friends here, and we'll see if we race downhill tomorrow. I don't know if the legs will be able to handle it.
Good job.
Thanks for joining us this year's Fox Racing Dual Slalom Finals. We still got all three.
Well, slalom just wrapped up. Probably one of the better sea otter slaloms I've watched in a long time. You've probably just listened to Nick's interview after winning, Nick Nesterov, which was pretty epic after getting to chat with him this morning. And Martha Gill and the women's taking out Jill Kittner in semifinals or however that works. But which is crazy because I think Jill has not won a Sea Otter for over 12 years or at least 10 years. So yeah, sorry, Tanner corrected me. Has not lost. She's won every year that I've been coming to Sea Otter. So it's been a minute. Tanner, come here. You've been photo guy inside the tape. What stood out about racing this afternoon?
It was a really technical track. It was real tight, but everyone was pushing hard. And a lot of people were overriding. A lot of crashes this year, actually. A lot of crashing.
It looked very tough. Super tough.
Yeah, it was a fine line between staying upright and pushing a front or a rear and falling on your face, which a lot of people did.
They did.
And it was really hard to shoot because it was so tight and it was very busy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, though. Slalom continues to reign supreme as one of the best disciplines that's out there. The unofficial Slalom World Championships has concluded. Martha Gill, Nick Nesteroff. Pretty sick to see. Yeah, it's 7 o'clock now. I'm leaving the venue. End of day three. Have a Crank Brothers dinner tonight. I keep saying I'm going to record audio at these dinners I go to, but it's kind of weird to bug people about bikes and talking after they've stood around in the sun for 8 hours and talked about bikes with people. So odds are you'll probably get an outro from me at, I'm going to call it at 1 a.m. tonight. I'll be wrapping up editing auto. See you then. The third day of the Sea Otter Classic has come to an end, and I'm 40 minutes ahead. It's only 12:20. Just got done editing all the audio you listened to. What a day. Super fun day, honestly. It was a crazy day for slalom racing. Still so stoked on getting to watch both fields. And on top of that, got to talk with some really cool people from some brands. You know, hear about new exciting forks from SR Sun Tour. It's always a treat to chat with John Hall with Intense about racing and bike development, as well as Lars from Transition. And honestly, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Get to keep working on my sunburn. Last day of the event. Sunday's always a little bit slower. So I'll see you guys in the morning. Final day. Cheers.